What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Ejo Side Kenty with Flip the Culture Podcast, where the culture won't change until we do. Got a special guest today. I know I always say that, but I came from a womb, all right? So it's Clarissa L. Kenty, man. Happy to have you here, man.
Thank you. I am so honored to be on Flip the Culture.
Yeah. So I know a lot of people don't know, because I don't ever hear you talk about it, even at home, but just your athletic journey. So you were a three-sport athlete, right, in high school. So you ran track, played flag football, and then basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that journey. Like, how did you get into some of those sports?
I started off in ballet and modern dance. And I did a lot of that and some modeling for years in my earlier ages. And I just woke up one day and said, I don't want to be a pretty girl. I'm tired of being called a pretty girl. I want to do something else. You know, I was also a cheerleader then too. And so I said, well, I said, I'm going to try my hand at this sports thing because I don't want to be a pretty girl anymore, you know. And so the first thing that I decided to do as far as athleticism was concerned is to play basketball. So I started playing basketball in the fourth grade. So I started basketball in the fourth grade. I played that all the way up to middle school. Then from middle school, I decided to try my hand in track. So I started running a little bit in track in middle school, in the eighth grade. And then ninth grade, I really just started to pick that up. In the 10th grade, I started playing powder puff football, or AKA flag ball is what they call it now. And so I did those sports all the way up to and through high school. Then in college, I did get a...
There we go. All right, let's talk about that. Because I know it was a transition that we're going to get to the transition, but that's what Flip the Culture is about.
Okay.
But, you know, I want to talk about what you said about not being a pretty girl, right? So it's like, I don't want to be a problem to play sports. But now you're starting to see that evolution of athletes, like they're wearing their edges and it ain't getting sweated out. They got the fingernails. I was just talking to somebody that ran track in college where it's like, yeah, your nails, you're trying to get a baton. And so, seeing how it was back then and then now how sports has evolved, especially around women's sports, like what is that telling you about the shift that's happened for women?
For women, yes. And you know, I guess I want to be clear in what I said about not wanting to be a pretty girl per se. I just didn't want to be prissy and just weak and dainty.
Yeah.
But what I realized though, EJ, just to kind of deflect a little bit, is that that was always in me. I don't care how many sports I played. I don't care how many balls I bounced or how many footballs I ran. It was just in me.
Right.
It was just in me. And I even went into being in the pageants in the 10th grade. So then I was playing sports and doing pageantry at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was just in me. But I came up in the area where FloJo, in the era when FloJo came out.
Okay.
And so she, to me, is what switched the culture and flipped the culture, if you will.
Can
I use
right,
that? Flip the culture.
Right
the culture.
Now, yep.
She is the one that flipped the culture by saying, hey, you can still be that prissy girl and you can still do athleticism.
Yeah.
And so FloJo was the fastest woman in America in running track. But she was the one that started bringing out the nails and the long hair and the full-fledged makeup. And her uniforms were really premium and just very soft and dainty.
Yeah.
And so she is the one that really, for me, flip the culture and saying, hey, you can still be prissy and you can still play ball. You can still do all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is the one I want to say that kind of flipped the culture long before what we're seeing now.
Right.
She is the one that really started the evolution of that.
So let's talk about that. So you was transitioning to college and I know that you won Miss Black USA, right? So coming from a three sport athlete and then getting, I think you went to Oral Roberts.
I did first year.
So first year. So tell us about that transition while you are also doing the sports, but you are also fine-tuning this other skill set that existed outside the realm of athleticism.
Right.
But it's something that was awarded and in college was paid for. So tell us about that.
Well, the way the pageantry came into play is that my parents are both college graduates. So their goal, their desire is to have all of their kids graduate from college. And so my dad always drilled to me, you're going to college, you're going to college, you're going to college. And I'm like, okay, you know, but why you keep pushing it? And I said, you ain't got the money you can pay it away. I didn't tell them that, of course. I didn't tell them that. But after a while, I'm thinking, you know what? They really want me to go to school. Their desire is there. I was a smart kid, but I wasn't a Dean's List kid. Yeah. And so, which means that my grade and my GPA wasn't high enough to put me in a space to where I could get a full academic ride to go to college. Mm-hmm. And even in playing sports, my sports and athleticism was okay. It was decent, but I wasn't set apart like you and EJ and you and Matthew to where your athleticism was so premium that you were able to get a scholarship there. I knew that. Right. And so, but I still wanted to play. And I said, well, let me kind of try my hand at this pageantry thing. You know, I was raised to be on the stage. I've never been afraid of the stage. So I was raised at 7 and 8 years old to always do public speaking. I was put in confidence classes. I was put in etiquette classes. Yeah. And so because of those things, I said, well, okay, I have these tools. So, and I have a talent. I sing. So let me try my hand at this pageant thing and see what can happen in that. And then I attached an affirmation. My affirmation was, I am going to school and I won't pay a dime for it. Mm-hmm. That was always my affirmation. So I leaned into the pageantry part of things because of I wanted to go to school and not have to pay a dime for it. So that's what pageantry came into play. And when I did go to college at ORU, I did run track there. I did have a partial scholarship in track. So I was decent. I was decent enough. I did get a partial scholarship to run there at ORU. And then I also played flag football there, too. Mm-hmm.
I did not know that, but sure that's something that I want to tug on as well, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm proximate to all your kids because I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. Okay,
and we have a lot of talents, and I know we glean from you, glean from dad. But take us through your thought process by experiencing the highs and lows from athleticism, mm-hmm. right? And experiencing the highs and lows from becoming a pageant winner. I saw how you were developing Taylor, right? Putting her inside the etiquette classes mm-hmm. and. Even certain pageants she was in, mm-hmm. right? She was in sports. She played flat football at Ramsey.
She's a quarterback, as a matter of fact.
Quarterback, right? So I trained her.
But seeing that, and then also dad, he was a quarterback. Right. But also seeing like my life, right? Public speaking, just was on TEDx Alabaster. So seeing how
you were radio broadcasting. Mm-hmm.
So seeing the parent go through life, and then also seeing the breadth of you all's lives existing inside the kids, how do you navigate a child's life or help prompt a child into their calling and what interests them mm. instead of just
like dumping all of your expectations
right.
on them?
Like, right. How did you do that?
It was a collective effort with your dad and I. And so what we're very adamant about is making sure that we were teaching you biblical principles. I was very adamant about that. I wanted to not only teach you that, but also to allow you to see that in me.
Now, I will say this. Mm. I didn't have to wear cologne growing up. You know why, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, 4 o'clock in the morning, system, room,
right? I wouldn't say how it.
To put anointing oil on us, man. And I'm grateful. I'm not complaining. But it's just like, dang, bro, who smell like frankincense? Jesus coming back or something?
Yes.
Just like, dang. But I'm grateful for it because mm-hmm. that was a strong foundation. Continue.
I had to lather all y'all up. Slather you up. That's right. But I praise God because of where we are today.
Yeah.
But, you know, my biggest thing is just making sure to implement integrity. Implement character. One of the things that your dad and I both were very adamant about, I was very dogmatic about it, is that if you start something, you're going to finish it. And so I remember there are times when you guys started football and all this stuff, and some of that you didn't want to, you know, so I don't think I'm going to like this. You have to stand there. You got to stand there. You're going to have to finish it. And for a couple of reasons. Number one, because you gave your word. Mm-hmm. You gave your word to the coach saying that you wanted to be on this team. You tried out. You made it. So now you're committed to your word. Your word is all you got. And also you're committed to your team. Because when you join a team, you just can't bail out because things get hard.
Yeah.
You got to stick in there. And so that was one of the major things that we taught all three of you. I remember when Taylor was cheerleading. That's my daughter. And she did her first year cheerleading. And it was hot. She was thirsty. She was tired. She said, Mommy, I don't want to cheer. I said, oh, well, you're going to cheer this year. You know, now if you don't want to go back after you finish your year, then fine. But you told the coach that you're going to cheer. You tried out. You made it. So our biggest thing is to make sure that you guys, we were able to teach you character and integrity. And out of that, we started seeing, although we raised all three of you the same, we started seeing where each one of you had different personalities. You had different skill sets. You had different talents and giftings. And so as we started to see those things kind of merge into place, then we started, we really let you guys show us what was in you. So I was, now I will say this. Now I didn't force a lot of stuff that I did as a kid. Mm-hmm. Your daddy forced that football on y'all. Y'all, that's how y'all, he was going to make sure you play football. But, and most men are like that.
Yeah.
But with me, I didn't force pageantry on Taylor. Mm-hmm. I did make it in a way to where she was exposed to the stage. That she was exposed, that none of you have ever been afraid of the stage. Mm-hmm. Always made sure that was a part of what you did. My dad did that with me. So those were some of the techniques and things that I exposed to you. But out of that, because of me exposing things to Taylor, now she's in theater and mm-hmm. art. And, you know, I don't push a lot of that, but I did that as a kid.
Yeah.
I grew up on the stage. And so now she's doing certain things. Now you're doing a lot of things in communications. You're doing a lot of, you got a lot of me in you. Mm-hmm. That you're doing it. And then Matthew the same way. And so, but we just really allowed you guys to really allow your natural giftings to come forward. And once we noticed that, then we started to hone in on that, making that a, see what we could do to kind of sharpen those skills and those tools that you have.
It sounds like a coach, to be honest. I mean, like a good parent, I feel like if you develop the skills to the understanding the schemes of sports, you're the parent,
right?
As a coach, and I thank you for opening up that, because that's even another perspective for athletes that are trying to become a dad or trying to become a mother, right? You've seen a good dialogue between a good coach and you've seen a bad coach, even though you might have grown up without a father or without a mother present. You've seen what a loving, authoritative figure looks like inside of your life to be able to pull from some of those concepts, because it looks the same. Like, once you are presented with something, even though you have a playbook or a game plan, what kind of audibles do you run to make sure that you put your position, in this case, kids, in the best place possible to be able to excel? And one thing a coach and a parent can never do is play the game for the athlete.
Right.
You could just put them in the best position possible. And I've known there's been certain play calls where coaches have called the wrong thing, but the athletes have been so prepared in a way to still excel in some of those environments. So you may have coaches that's a bad coach, but it's hard to dim the light on athletes that gleam.
Right.
That's that pillar on the hill. So you've written Miraculously Equipped to empower readers to see their divine preparation in life's challenges. What was the moment you knew your story had to be shared beyond personal testimony? And Miraculously Equipped is a book that she recently released this year in March or February.
It was in it was on my mom's birthday. So it was January 31st.
January 31st. Okay, I bet.
I knew that there was always a book inside of me. And so, but I believe that I'm called to help people to understand what they have on the inside of them. Some people don't realize they're stuck in certain areas, but if they understand what they have on the inside, it can push them to where they need to go.
Yeah.
You know, it's just trying to fine tune what is that. And so I believe that we're all miraculously equipped. Now, we have natural giftings and talents, but if we associate that with the power of the living God, that makes it miraculous in the equipment. If that makes sense. We can do various things on our own, but apart from God, we can't be successful. Apart from God, we cannot be have the potential that we need in order to succeed and to help other people succeed too. And so sometimes when you're going through challenges and adversities and that sort of thing, we feel like, oh my gosh, this is the end of the world. I can't make it. I can't do it. Oh, but wait a minute. Now you are miraculously equipped in this area. So what is it that you can do? Let's dig deep. Let's figure out let's look at another perspective. Let's look at another way of how we can get through this. And all of that, and based on my book, is hinged on the Word of God. It's hinged on how God has miraculously equipped us. And most people will say, put his super to our natural.
Yeah.
And so different people are getting different things out of the book. The book starts off with a fiction story, and then it's biblical principles that attach to the biblical, to those fictional stories. Yeah. And so people love that. They have loved how that particular book has been constructed. And so people are saying, listen, now that as I'm going through these issues in my life, now I realize, number one, I'm not going through it by myself. Number two, other people have probably been through it too. Mm-hmm. And number three, if I just look to the hills upon which cometh my help, yeah, I can get through whatever it is I'm going through. Mm-hmm. There has never been an issue, EJ, that we're dealing with, that anybody has dealt with on the face of this earth, that has not been outlined in the Word. Mm. Yeah. Not one thing.
I think that's where people get distant from God, mm-hmm, is when you try to isolate your problems from His proximity to your life. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where Satan tries to win his battles with us. Right. Because whenever we can isolate ourselves, because it says in the Word that the Lord will never leave you or forsake you. Mm-hmm. But whenever we can isolate in our mind, right, that we're alone and our problems are unique.
Right.
Right. Our story is unique, but it doesn't mean that it's isolated.
Right.
And what I mean is, there's a community of believers inside the kingdom of God where it's just like what you said. Like, we've been miraculously equipped to be able to go back to the Word, mm-hmm, because the Word outlines all the principles that we need to align ourselves with and find relatability for our individual unique problems and issues. And like you said, when they read your book, they get something different. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody went back and read your book 10 years later, that can still be something totally different, mean something totally different to that same person. That's how powerful it is.
And EJ, I'm going to tell you something that's even funny, you know, and you and I have talked about it, because mm-hmm, we both wrote our books around the same time. I'm going to go back and read my book again, because I'm probably going to get something different than what I got by writing the book.
Yep.
You know, I'm really looking forward to doing that, because I'm in a different space now.
Yeah.
Because when I wrote the book, my mother was alive. Mm. Right. So now when I go back to read the book, she's no longer with us. And so, she was able to know that I became an author. She was able to read the acknowledgement in the book, but she didn't live long enough to read it. And so now I need to read that book, because this has been such a terrific challenge to navigate the space of that, my mom not being anymore, because it was unexpected. Mm-hmm. So now I need to go back and understand that while I'm miraculously equipped in all of these other things, I'm miraculously equipped in order to navigate my life now without my mom and now without my parents, because both of them are deceased. And so now I have to take my own information and apply it back to myself. And I just don't know how easy that's going to be, because this has been probably one of the more challenging experiences that I've had in my life.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I read my book again, because I know, and you know this, there's certain moments in the writing process that is just divine. Mm-hmm. Right, where you like lose yourself inside of your work, and it's literally God orchestrating the pen.
Right.
And it's like, cause like what's going to be pouring out of you is revelation that you probably hadn't even gotten yet. And my book was actually, healing for me. Mm-hmm. So everything within that book, that was me healing. So a lot of that is the revelation that God was giving to me, and me just reading the book again gave me a better understanding to be able to even talk about my book to other people. Mm. Because there were certain things in the book where people would come back to me and I was like, dang, I put that in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so much content in there. Like, I know my story, but the revelation of the story that's in there is hidden.
Right.
It's hidden. And that brings me to my next point on just your journey, because you went from running in between lines on the track, and you know you got your home field advantage, right? Mm-hmm. You're out here in life. You've been on big stages. You've been on broadcasting. You've been on news stations. But then you went out to South Africa. Like, how did your ministry extend all the way there? And you reflecting on your journey as like a student athlete, playing in the confines of a line in a stadium, and then now it's in a national reach. Like, how did you get to that?
I never changed my strategy. Mm. And, you know, when you are playing ball or you're on a team, there's always either strategy that's put in place or plays that are put in place, just depending on what sport you're playing. And so I never changed my strategy. So my strategy was, what is it that I'm believing God for? Back then, I was believing God to go to college and not pay a dime for it. I did that. So I hit a space in my life and I said, you know what? I'm bored. I need something else in my life. I'm doing the same thing over and over. I need something else. I need a different reach in my life. I want to be around diversity. I want something new. I want something different. And so I really started petitioning God about that and talking to God about it. And I remember one day, I don't know, when we were talking about, I was with some friends. And so we were discussing about traveling abroad and internationally and stuff. I said, oh yeah, I would love to do that. I said, but wait, I'm not called to Africa now. I don't want to go to no third world country, nowhere. I ain't going there. You know, so no, I'm not going to do that. And then I had a check in my spirit. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, now, Lord, I looked up like this. I said, I said, now, Lord, if you want me to go, I'm going.
Hold on. Africa is not a country.
No, I was talking about third world.
You said third world country. And you said Africa.
Okay, what is it?
Africa is a continent.
Okay. I'm not doing third world, continent, country, or anything attached to a third world.
Well, continent so, can be third world.
Well, that's what I told God.
Yeah.
Let me try to correct me while out in front of these streets now. I taught you better. Anyway, so.
Viewers, misinformation. We can't do that. It's a brand. Come on now. I get right. So you said people, you was telling the people that. Come on, lock in.
I'm gonna lock in, all right,
hey, come on,
with these five right here.
Hey, Ma, this is my show.
Okay. So I said I wasn't going third world country.
Okay.
That's what I told God, as incorrect as it was. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and I said, well, no. I said, now, if I go third world, I said, I have to have a burning bush now, Lord, because if you want me to go, I'm going. All I ask is that you give me a burning bush, you know, and I always got kind of tickled about that. But several years later, I think it may have been about 3 years later.
All right, so that brings me to the next question. Okay, so you were running around the track. You went from playing powder puff football, now known as flag football, and also basketball. Mm-hmm. You went through all that transition, being on big stages, broadcast, having your own companies, and then you somewhere in South Africa. Okay, like how did you get to that point from being a student athlete, being now global and having a global impact? Like, how did you get to that point?
I never changed my strategy. Mm. You know, and you know, by being in athleticism and you were a quarterback for most of those years, strategy is important. And everybody has a playbook or whatever it is that they need to either coach or teach the kids on how to be successful. And so I never changed my strategy. Whatever it is I wanted out of life, I put it out there in the spirit and I stayed on it until it manifested. And so when I was in high school, my confession was, I'm going to go to school, going to college, and not have to pay a dime for it. I said that until that happened. It was years later, but it happened with my winning the Miss Black USA pageant. And when I won that pageant, I got a full scholarship to go to Miles College. But this is the thing. When I competed in that pageant, even though it was a national pageant, the Miles College at that time was only offering a partial scholarship. And when I won the pageant, they called my name. I just looked up and I said, to God be the glory. I'm still going to school and not pay a dime for it. I said that on stage. So something that happened is unprecedented. They never do this. When I was doing my walk and I was had my roses and waving, they said, excuse me, we have an announcement to make.
Hmm. It wasn't Steve Harvey, was it?
No, it wasn't. Praise be unto God. This story would be a little different if it was. Right. But they said that the president, Albert Sloan, at the time, said that he has changed the scholarship from a partial scholarship to a full scholarship.
Wow.
And that was after I said, you know what? I'm not going to worry about it. Mm-hmm. I still give you glory. I thank you for this victory, but I'm still going to school and not pay a dime for it. So I didn't change that way of thinking. And so I got to a point in life where I was bored and I wanted more things to do. I wanted to expand my wings. I needed to fly because I spent, you know, the last 20 something years being a wife, being a mom. Mm-hmm. And you guys are growing up now. You've grown up now. You're starting to get out the house. I'm empty nesting. I needed more. You know, I've separated my time for this. I needed more. And so I said, well, I need to go someplace. I need to do something just out of the box, just unprecedented, just different. And I said, and I was talking to some friends of mine, well, what do you think about going to another country? And I said, well, no, I don't do third world. Now I don't do third world countries at all. Mm. But I said, now, Lord, if you want me to go, I'll go. Now, because if you want me to go, I'm going regardless of what I want. Is what he wants me to do.
And where'd you go again?
South Africa.
So, okay.
Okay.
All right. Just making sure you didn't say Africa was a country.
I think not. I did.
Oh, well, it's a continent, Ma.
Thank you, Mr. Kenty.
I actually thank you for the respect, because you know it's my show. And I also was thinking about I had actually saw that it was an article about the representation of Africa's size on the world map. And it's actually bigger than what we think of it to be.
Oh, yeah.
And you would know that.
You've been
to the country.
But thank you. But you know what I find to be interesting? Most people say third world country.
Yeah.
Most people say that.
Because we've been programmed to dilute. I ain't even going to get on that. We're talking about
that's sports. That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's
another podcast.
Oh, man.
And it's my story.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
So it's going to be a country in my story. So I said, Lord, if you want me to go, I just ask for a very small burning bush. Mm. I just need a burning bush in order to go, because it's going to take that for me to go across seas. And so here we are years later. Actually, last year was my first year going. And I had a dream prior to being asked. And I believe that was my burning bush. Had I not had that dream, I would not have been prepared for the ask. And so when I had that burning bush, I got tickled because I remember what I told God. And I'm like, Lord, I know. And I kind of laughed it off, you know, even when I said that. But when he did what he did, and the dream actually confirmed everything that the lady was asking me and wanted me to go do. And so being able to go to South Africa, I went to a place called Jeffreys Bay. And so my layover was in Johannesburg, which most of you know about, and Cape Town, which most of you know about. Johannesburg is more towards the ocean. It's a beautiful area. And that's where I went last year and also this year. And so when I got there, I didn't know quite what God wanted me to do. I knew I had to speak at a women's conference, which was amazing. That was my first time being able to not only go to another continent, but also to be able to speak, go in as a national speaker, to get on the stage in another continent and to speak. At that point, when I stood on that stage, God graced me to be, at that point, an international speaker. Mm.
I think it was already in you.
Mm.
And the reason why I'm saying that is that we just need an opportunity. And I'm thinking about just my dogs. I'm not referring to you as a dog or anything like that. But I am saying, like, you know, we're like puppies to God.
Right.
Right? Like we feel like we know God. We're trying to get in the right standing with him. We're pursuing him, right? But we're also looking at him like, okay, what's next, bro? Like, I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't let him know you hungry and you in the other room and your bowl inside the kitchen.
That's right.
Right? Like, you have to go over there and sit by that bowl and really look at God and be like, I don't got to say anything, but I'm going to do what a dog do. I'm going to do what you birthed me to do. But when it's time for me to eat God, like, I got hunger inside of me.
Right.
Right? So it's like you've had that hunger to pursue something. You say you got bored.
Right.
Right. I don't think you were bored. I think you knew that there was something else there's more out there. And what was in front of you didn't sustain.
That's right.
What could be fulfilling in that moment. Right. So it's like you're now searching and navigating and you're getting in position. Because when we talk about athletes, you can get a 5-center that's 7'4". I'm talking about can dunk out this world, can get rebounds. But the moment you put him at point guard, his stock goes all the way down.
That's
because
right.
What? He's out of position.
Out of position.
So I feel like you getting into a position to be able to receive a dream, to get in the position to receive a confirmation from God, right? That's preparing you to get on that stage. But I wholeheartedly believe that you were a international speaker before this stage was granted for you to stand on there, because you can't just become something once you're presented. Once it happens, like, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be something in you. There has to be a training period.
It's a draw.
Yeah, it has to be an onboarding process. You know what I'm saying? Like, it had to get, even jobs are like that. Training process before you actually go into the title. It's like you have to shadow something. You have to go down.
You're preaching.
Yeah, you was a, no, I ain't preaching.
No, but you know what? Now that a lot of people don't know, and I can share this on Flip the Culture, I am now an international author. And my books are now in a bookstore in South Africa.
So you went to speak, but then you also had something tangible to be able to leave something there.
Well, this is the thing about it. When because of how we packed, you know, you can only pay for, you can only pack a certain amount or the wait is over. So I only took one or two books with me. And so, but I knew that I felt like, God, I got to have my books here. And so somebody was coming from Birmingham over to South Africa in that area. And I was able to get my books to get into her luggage. And she took the book. That's when you know it's God.
So that's why Taylor had asked me to give her the books. And I was like, man, what are you? I'm across town. So I was the vessel.
You were the vessel.
So had I not met Taylor, which is my little sister, had I not met her, so I'm glad that God used me, because I promise in that moment, I was like, bruh.
He allowed you to flip the culture. You flipped it. Amazing. That's right.
Didn't even know.
Be a cheerful giver. Be cheerful. Jeez, be a cheerful giver. But now I am an international author. My books are now in a bookstore there. And so, you know, and how God is doing things, EJ, is he's doing it apart from me. And when things are happening, I'm like, oh, wow, because I'm an overthinker. Just by nature. And I have not been able to overthink any of these things that God is doing and how he's doing what he's doing. Never thought after I went to South Africa last year, I always said, well, maybe I'll go back. In my mind, I was like, oh, maybe that was a one-time thing. Went back again and stayed a month this time. Spoke at 6 conferences. Six of them. And God is just, he's just doing a miraculous thing in South Africa and in other continents and countries. And so both of those. And so I believe that there's something there for that. And but I'm just, I don't think you have enough time in this segment to even talk about how all the things and the impact that we are able to make while we're there. The impact with the educators. We had 2 conferences for the educators. We had 2 conferences for students. We had a conference for the marketplace and a conference for the, women's conference. And so these people were just, their minds were blown by what God is doing. And community is very important. Even though we're seas separate us, we are still, we're still bound together as community. And it's very important. I was able to really have an amazing relationship with friends there. So now when I go to South Africa, I just go into their radio station and they say, okay, you have it. You know how to run it. And so I just sit there and do my thing. It's just like being at home. So it's really nice. And I, as I said before, I really believe that there are some businesses that are going to be, that I will be starting there, and some ministries that I'll be starting there in South Africa. Now, I am also, I can say that I am also an international minister because I was able to actually minister in one of the churches there on one Sunday. The pastor asked me to speak. And as they say, they shared the mic with me. So God is doing something cross seas. He really is.
You said something about like being an overthinker, right? And I'm just sitting right here thinking about just processing how you can relate that to sports and how you are able to navigate even now. And I'm thinking about preparation.
Right.
Right. God prepared you to become an author, but training isn't beautiful. Training isn't something that people sign up for. Like they could sign up for a game, but in order to excel in the game, you got to be trained, right?
So, well, I'll tell you this. It took me 10 years to write one book because I had to navigate myself through my own challenges, my own disparities, things that people said to me in my younger years that I couldn't do this and couldn't do that, to believe that somebody would want to read something that I wrote. I had someone 10 years ago buy my first book. They actually purchased my first book. They said, I'm going to go ahead and purchase this book because I know you're going to write one. 10 years.
I think I know who that is.
Mother Cunningham.
Yeah.
And I did put an acknowledgement to her in that book as well. And so when I got the book written, she was so excited. Of course, she was at the book signing and everything. So, yeah, it was just really amazing. And sometimes you have to navigate through those things. Mm-hmm. But just don't give up.
Yeah.
You got to stay that course. You can't allow things to disrupt you. And if you always keep that vision of what God initially gave you about yourself, if you don't ever let that fade, you'll be able to push through a lot of adversities, and even those things that seem to be insurmountable. Mm.
That is amazing. Because I was there to witness a lot of that transitional moments, and I feel like right at the end of finishing certain projects is when it was the toughest this year, right? And that's when a lot of people quit. So it's like those 9 years that you had spent in the 10th year is like, if you quit in year 10, all those 9 years were for naught.
Were for naught,
right? Yeah. So it's like I'm seeing now, just from being in close proximity to your story and watch you navigate through the emotions and the back and forth with God, like and navigating loss, also gains, right? And it's like, how can God be good and there's a lot of bad happening at the same time?
And I'll tell you this too, because in December of last year, October, something came on me all of a sudden, said, get the book done.
Face.
You cannot wait on this anymore. Don't you go into 2025 and not be an author.
Hey, see, you trying to be motivational right now. It was really because you know I was getting my book done. You trying to
No. But say, tell the people.
You trying to be
because you know what? You sat on your book for a minute.
I did. 5 years.
You did.
Yeah. It was a 10.
Yeah, my 10. But guess what? As a mother, I was determined I wasn't going to let you put 5 more to that. And let me tell y'all what I did. I didn't tell him. He didn't know anything about what I was doing behind the scenes. So I went ahead, got my book done, and they sent the sample book in the mail. And I gave it to him. I took that book up and I said, here, check this out. And what did you do? You read the title first, and then what did you do? No, I'll read down the way you saw my name.
I can't remember.
Oh, I'll tell you.
Don't make me know, because I can't remember now.
He took the book and he looked and said, Mom, this your book? I said, yeah, it's done. This your book? You finished the book? I said, yeah, my book is done.
Yeah.
Only thing I have to do now is just read through it. And I had to make a few through adjustments and corrections. But all I got to do is just read through it. As a mother, I did that for twofold. I had to get mine out because I knew what God was doing. And I had to make sure you put more fire under you to get yours done. Mm-hmm. And so one thing about EJ, we're a lot alike. So he don't like to be outdone. Okay? He don't like to be outdone. And he's very competitive. So that same night, he stayed up until about 4 o'clock the next morning finishing his book. And we both really launched our books at the same time.
Yeah. And we both buried it with Mama.
Yep. We did sign books and we put it in the casket with her.
Yep.
And so, but we both, a lot of people don't know this, so we both birthed our books out at the same time. But it was because I had to be strategic and want to make sure that I didn't want him to fall into that category that I had fallen into and just waiting another 5 years to get it done. And so that was funny.
That's good. Because I'm even looking at, like, you end up getting to the promised land, but I'm thinking about Moses, right? And going into the wilderness and traveling. It's like, no, it didn't have to take 40 years, right? But your faithfulness of you getting towards the end, but also feeling that pressure, but also having enough awareness to be able to say, all right, let me use where I've gone to pour back into him, which is me. And it's putting the fire, and we both were able to excel
at the same
time. And I think I went on my book tour before yours, and I experienced different things, right?
Yeah.
And then I was able to help you navigate certain things with the book signing. So it was just, I saw it full circle.
It's iron sharpening iron.
Yep. It truly did.
Yeah.
It truly did, man. So I appreciate that, Mom. Is there anything that you would like to say to close this out, especially how Flip the Culture and also the TEDx Alabaster community can help you in any way, serve you in any way? Where can they find the book? How can they get in contact with you for speaking engagements? Mm-hmm. Anything that you would like to promote?
Yes, definitely promote the book, Miraculously Equipped. You can go out there to Amazon. pull up Miraculously Equipped. There's no other book out there like that but mine. Yeah. You can also search by my name as well. But you can also go to ClarissaKenty.com. You can go and get all of your booking information on how you can book me for motivational speaking, training, and development. We do a lot of goal setting things as well, and also MC events as well. So go to ClarissaKenty.com.
All right, man. Thank y'all so much for tuning in with another episode of Flip the Culture, where the culture won't change until we do. Love you guys. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Flip the Culture Anthem.